It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. We are live from the Racing Boys studio here in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to the show. Got a good show lined up for you today. As usual, we have the postman. Steve Post is going to join us here in a little bit. He is the host of Wing Nation and the lead pit reporter for MRN. We'll be talking to him in just a little bit. Also, we're going to have on a friend of mine that I was so glad to see him walk away from a really, really nasty wreck at Caney Valley. Lane Goodman, better known as Yogi. Landed in a pond after he flipped his sprint car. And we're going to talk to him about that wreck a little bit later. Lane Goodman is the son of Mike Goodman, a guy that has really been around a long time, a real good sprint car driver, his dad, Mike. So we'll talk to Lane Yogi Goodman here in just a little bit. Austin, how are you doing today, bud? You doing all right? Hit your button.
Does it work today? It actually works.
It worked. Yeah, how about that?
Well, if it worked, then it's going to be a good day.
It's going to be a good day. So you saw that wreck of Yogi. Man, that was pretty spectacular, wasn't it?
Yeah, I never thought a sprint car could flip for that long. And that, well, I didn't know there was a pond over there. So when I was on Facebook Saturday night and I seen, you know, Lane's car sitting in a pond,
Did you Google map it?
Well, yeah, of course I did, but I knew they were in Caney, but I didn't realize that there was where the pond was at. I knew it wasn't in the infield, and to see it was that far from the track, I mean, that was a big wreck, and I mean, it just totally just ripped that car to shreds, and there's absolutely nothing left of it. But
could you imagine?
I couldn't imagine landing in a pond. No thanks.
And from what I understand, there was several people that jumped in the pond to get to him as soon as possible after he landed in the pond. And listen, that car was pretty submerged too, wasn't it?
Well, I think the interview that I heard with him, that the car landed left side down. So when he got out, he was completely underwater. And yeah, so the pictures we saw was after the fact and after the car was actually, you know, upright. But fire is everybody's, or is every driver's worst nightmare or fear. Now I think ponds and water is right there, you know, rivaling it.
Right. There was a track that we went to one time on the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour, and there was a big, giant, just a body of water just off the back straightaway, and a lot of the drivers did not want to race that night. I'm trying to think of the name of that racetrack. Hey, Kurt, can you remember the name of that racetrack that we had that big puddle of water on the back straightaway and everybody got mad at me because I said that they were chicken? It was Paducah. That's it. I knew Kirk Elliott would remember. Listen, Kirk has got the greatest mind. I have been so blessed to have this guy for 22 years. I just can't even believe it. But anyway, it was Paducah. There was a big, big, giant puddle on the back straightaway, and everybody thought they were going to flip upside down and drowned in it. And nobody wanted to race there. And I got on the air, and I kind of called several people out on that. What do you think about that, having a body of water near the racetrack?
There's not a fence around it. It's stupid. It's going to kill somebody. What? All it takes is a driver getting knocked out and a lazy safety crew.
Right.
Or that can't get to him.
Right. I mean, you can't get to him quick enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Either way, you just killed the guy.
Well,
I mean, you can't have that. I mean, you could. I like having water around the racetrack. I mean, it looks nice. Places like Lucas Oil,
Right. The big lake
out back. The lakes out back and yeah. Lake Lucas. I mean, it makes the track look really clean and nice, but just put a fence around it.
Yeah.
That's all it needs.
Yeah, just put a tall enough fence to where a car can't get in there, right? That's what you got to do. I'm a little surprised that the insurance company doesn't make them do that. Wouldn't you be surprised about that?
Well, they don't race sprint cars, but
How often?
4 times a year.
Yeah.
A couple of national shows, a couple of OCRS shows, and your stock cars or modifieds aren't going to get out there.
That far down there.
I mean,
unless a throttle sticks or something.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you can hit the cutoffs, the kill switch, and there was, you know, a Jersey barrier set up that was, you know, 2 or 3 blocks high, and I mean, Lane cleared both of the, that set of wall, and your modifieds, your stock cars, they'd hit it, you know.
Yeah, he got a little altitude, didn't he?
Yes.
Man, he got up in the air. So we're glad that Yogi's okay. We're going to talk to him here in just a little bit about his wreck down there at Caney Valley. Again, Steve Post is going to join us here in just a little bit. Let's get into last night's Flow Night in America. Jimmy Owens, he pretty much dominated that race, didn't he, last night?
I didn't let every lap, no yellows.
Yeah. Went green all the way, led every lap. That was his seventh. No, that was his eighth win in a row at 411. That guy's got that place down a little bit, doesn't he?
I would say so. He's, you know, that's in Tennessee, and Tennessee is kind of the heart of, you know, late model racing in the East, and a lot of good guys go there, and there's a lot of, even on the local level, I think all the races that he won maybe were national events, but that's a tough track to look like to get around, and you know, Jimmy is from the Tennessee area, so he probably's raced there, you know, throughout his career.
A ton of laps
and ton of experience, and so not surprised that he's going out there and doing this. But I mean, you figured, you know, you'd have guys like, you know, Larson or Marler get up there and be a factor, or even Ricky Thornton or Brandon Shepherd, and that just really wasn't the case. And Jimmy hasn't really been that good this year, I feel like. You know, he's won a handful of races, but you normally see Jimmy winning almost up to, you know, double digit, you know, wins, and he really hasn't done that, you know, this much this year, and really hasn't been in the spotlight that much. And for him to come out there and kind of have a dominating run like that, maybe is a sign that his year's starting to turn around for him.
Yeah, no doubt. Brandon Shepherd is the current point leader, and Bobby Pierce is second. I'm going to do the math here because they don't exactly tell you the difference in between. There's 100 points between Brandon Shepherd. Oh, I should have known that just looking at it. There's 100 points between Brandon Shepherd and Bobby Pierce. Ricky Thornton is third in the Castrol Flow Racing Night in America points. Any surprises there that Brandon Shepherd's leading the points? I'm not too surprised about that, are you?
No, I think he's been the most consistent car in the tour all year long.
Yeah, no doubt. Last night, you know what was funny about last night? How many times have we seen Kyle Larson get lapped in that late model? I can't recall that ever happening. Can you?
That's probably happened, but I mean, that was not a Kyle Larson track. You know, later in the race, he did get the top to kind of work, but still, I mean, he wasn't making a ton of ground up on the guy in front of him, which was maybe for 13th or 12th. And it just, like you said, you don't see that very often. Like I said, it's not a Kyle Larson track. It was a really slow and somewhat boring racetrack. It didn't provide much action or excitement.
The racing for second, third, and fourth was pretty good, right in there. Those guys were mixing it up pretty good. Mike Mahler ran second for the longest time. Chris Madden ended up getting around him. And I thought there for a second that the Corey Hedgecock was going to get around Mike Mahler as well, but Mike got up on the wheel and was able to hold him off. But just nobody had anything for Jimmy Owens last night. Chris Madden, what did he win that race by? Did they say, what, like 4 seconds?
Yeah, something like that. It's just, yeah. It forced everybody to run right through the middle. It was so slick, and there was a little bit of moisture on the bottom, but it was so, the bottom there, it's kind of flat, and you can't really carry a whole, and it's kind of, I mean, it's rounded, but it's a tight radius, and you can't really carry a whole lot of momentum, and the top was too far around and nothing to lean on, so, I mean, yeah, if you're back in traffic, you're just going to race side by side with the guy and maybe not really get away from him, and it's not going to allow guys to drive the front, so it's all starting position, and that's what it was.
Tammy, she chimed in. She said, First time I can remember seeing Larson get lapped in a dirt race, and I'm with you, Tammy. In my mind, I can't figure out any time that I've ever seen Kyle Larson get lapped in a dirt car. Not one time can I figure that out. Josh Richards out of Boom Briggs ride, Max Blair in. I haven't read that yet, to be honest with you there, that Josh Richards is out of the Boom Briggs ride. I didn't hear that. Did you hear that? Wow, that's pretty big news, isn't it? You know, we can always count on Pete. Pete is just one of those guys that just constantly feeds us information here on Mostly Motorsports. And Pete, we always want to thank you for doing so, because you always bring some good stuff, and we always appreciate that as well. That racetrack last night, it was pretty slick all the way across, wasn't it?
Yes, there was. Like I said, there wasn't really much on the bottom and the top. I mean, there's stuff up there, but it was too far around and not. It was kind of fluffy and dusty, and you really couldn't lay the right rear on it and have something to lean on and get a big run without knocking the decking off the right rear quarter panel or spoiler off the right rear. And yeah, like I said, it just forced everybody to momentum it like right through the middle with no wheel spin and keep the car going forward.
You know, I like what Dave Tyson said here. He brought up a good point. How many drivers landed in the junkyard outside Old Manzanita Speedway and were facing the junkyard dogs? I know Dick Sutcliffe did. And, you know, unfortunately for me, I hate to say this, I never went and saw a race at Manzanita. But Scotty Cook and I, the week after it closed, we decided we were going to drive down there and take a look at the racetrack. And when we got down there, we had access to everything in that whole place. We walked around Manzanita and checked out everything, and there was all kinds of signs and stuff. I kind of wish I would have taken a sign for Manzanita to have in my studio here. But what a great track. Our own Jesse Hockett won the last non-wing sprint car race there. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, he did good. Alan Miller said a four-cylinder sprint ended up in the pond at CMS years ago. That had to be a long time ago, Alan. Gosh, I can't even remember. It seems like Kirk and I, we called some four-cylinder races. And if I'm not mistaken, Jesse Hockett won his first sprint car race. It was in a four-cylinder sprint car race down at Linn County Speedway, if I'm not mistaken. And Tom Wilson and I had him on the air with us that week. But I got to think that that's around 2000 that they had those four-cylinder sprint cars. I'm just not sure exactly when that was. But, man, it was a long time ago. I know that Kirk and I broadcasted 9 races one year on Sports Radio 810 WHB back when they didn't have a lot of programming, right when we made the transition from KCTE to 1510 to Sports Radio 810. We were able to do 9 races in one year, and I know that we did several of those four-cylinder races so back in the day. So anyway, this weekend, MLRA Championship Final at Tri-City Speedway, Pontoon Beach, Illinois. It's going to pay $5,000 to win. Right now, Chris Simpson has the lead over there. I'm not Chris Simpson, Chad Simpson, I should say. It was Chad, right? Chad's got two wins this year, 12 top fives, 16 top tens, and 21 features. He's pretty much the man over there right now, isn't he?
It sure sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're having, that's only 5 races outside of the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
That can be either, you know, crashes or part failures, and to have that small a number just shows, you know, he's been around it for a long time. I remember hearing that name for just countless years, and even though I really don't follow MLRA that much, I know who the Simpsons are, and
right.
Yeah, that just shows how well they've got their program over the last couple of years and know how to win championships, and it shows why, you know, they're in a fight every year, you know, with MLRA.
Mm-hmm. I got to say that I'm kind of looking forward to this weekend. I'm going to be leaving as soon as the show's over. I'm going to do my show down at Devil's Bowl the next 2 days. I'm excited to get down there and check out all the action. Who do you think is the odds-on favorite right now to win at Devil's Bowl this weekend? You got any thoughts on that?
No, I don't.
No. Is it always easy to pick Sam Hayfortief to win at Devil's Bowl because he lives right down the road there and that's his home track?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could pick Sam. You always like to pick Sam, so I'm not surprised you said that.
Well, the only reason I say that is that's Sam's track. You know, Travis Rylett's always good down there. I don't know if he's going to have a ride or not down there, but Wayne Johnson's always good. Matt Covington's really good at Devil's Bowl Speedway. So I would not be surprised to see Wayne Johnson, Matt Covington, Sam Hayfortief win. I wouldn't be surprised to see Blake Hahn win down there as well. It's just, what'd you think of that racetrack when you raced down there, Austin? Did it catch you a little off guard?
I didn't make more than 10 laps.
You only made 10 laps?
Yeah. First night, heat race, hit the tractor tire in turn three after I lost the nose and dirty air behind Sam. So that was lap five or so. And then Brandon Anderson ran a guy over into turn one on the start of the heat race the next night, and I had nowhere to go and flip. So, yeah, I drove 12 hours to make about 10 to 12 laps. And
how bad did it tear up your car that
killed
night?
It killed the frame.
Yeah.
Yep, that was the last race ever on a Maxim Big Max.
Yeah. And that was the only Big Max that you had, wasn't it?
Yep, and I'll never buy one again.
What didn't you like about the Big Max?
They're just, so for Maxims, they build two cars. It's a Big Max.
And a standard.
And a standard car.
Right.
Standard car's more for a 410 than Big Max is for 305 and 360s. And they say it claims to get, helps with, you know, like weight transfer and help get, you know, weight on the rear tires and off the front with it being a steel block. And, you know, I always hear guys complain about the Big Max and never knew that they, you know, what the difference felt between a Big Max and a standard car until I got into the one I got now, which is standard. And it's just the standard car is more free, and it's not bound up. So, like, if you go run the cushion, it's not trying to trip over the right front or just tied. And it's just everything on the car just moves and works so much better, and it's free. And it's better to tune, too. It's just I've never – just actually just more consistent overall is what it is.
But you ran pretty good in that car, though, didn't you?
Yeah, it was just a learner car.
Yeah. That was your first car.
It was my first car.
Yeah. And that was an ex-Brian Brown car, right?
All of them are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see what you can do next year. Now, you're going to go up to I-80 this weekend, right? We talked about that a little bit yesterday. Are you excited about getting up there, back up there? You'd be more excited if you were driving, right?
Oh, that's what every driver is going to say if anybody asks them that question. But, yeah, I mean, if I can't be there racing, I'd rather be there as you know, a crew guy and you know, helping Riley and paying back what he helped me get my opportunity up there, you know, 2 weekends ago to go up there and have a good night and you know, had a third place run. So hopefully we can try and duplicate that. And it's going to be tough against the Outlaws. I always enjoy going to the Outlaws shows. You can just learn a lot from just being a spectator sometimes, and also just, you know, parking next to a couple of the Outlaw guys and you just look over every once in a while and see what they're doing. You'll always learn something new. So
yeah,
for someone, you know, that's wanting to get to that level at some point, it's just great experience. And you know, who better to learn from than the best?
Right. You know, I think there's a couple other guys that I probably should mention that have a chance to win at Devil's Bowl this weekend. I got to think that Dylan Westbrook, because he's always pretty good down there as well. And Seth Bergman. Now, I know Seth isn't racing full-time anymore because he's really taking care of his business, his coffee business. But Seth Bergman is one hell of a 360 sprint car driver, isn't he?
Yeah, I raced with Seth at Miro for a couple of years, and he's one of the best. And like you said, he doesn't get to race here a whole lot, but for the limited schedule that he gets to run,
he's still fast.
Normally, you might see guys come back and have one or two races that are just races they kind of throw away, that they're trying to get back into their rhythm. And mm-hmm. Seth can take 2 months off, 3 months off, and come back and win his first race back. Right. I think he did that. Maybe he won one race this year, and he was off for a couple months and came back and won, and you didn't know he was racing, and mm-hmm. it just shows how good Seth is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Steve Post, the postman, is going to join us here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll be back with more Mostly Motorsports in a moment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
Three 9-hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. Joining us now is a good friend of the Racing Boys. We always appreciate him coming on with us every Wednesday when he can. Steve Post, the postman, joins us now. Steve, how you doing, brother?
I am fantastic, Scott. Hope all is well out there.
How'd it go last night at Bellbridge? You were there last night, right?
No, we were off this week. We're on the next 2 weeks. So they gave us they gave the kids and the parents and everyone a breather this week. So they run some other series there, some other karting events, and I think they have a karting event tonight. We're getting a lot of rain here, so I don't know if it's going to happen, but so they juggle around a little bit, and we actually had this week off. So kind of nice not to be out there each and every Tuesday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So is go-kart racing real popular out there in your area in the 704? Is it pretty popular?
Yeah, I think it used to be a lot more than it is now. The reason it used to be, I mean, World Karting Association was based right here at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and then there was another group that did a lot of karting, and I think it's still popular, but I think what's happened with it is between the combination of Bandoleros and Legends and the box stocks and outlaw cards at Millbridge right into the micro sprints. We got restricted micro sprints as well. And then I think we have a great quarter midget track as well. Bobby Labonte actually founded a quarter midget track years ago here in Salisbury. And I think that has dinged up the karting business a little bit. I think it's still strong. I think there's still a lot of it going on, and I don't know a lot about it. I think there's still a fair amount going on, but there's so many other options for people to get started. And a lot of the other things, what I hear, and again, I'm speaking just from hearsay,
right?
You know, with karting, there's so much that goes into the tire technology, the challenges, the soaking tires, and that sort of thing. Where I think when we look at these other forms of motorsports, there's a little bit more restrictions on it, and probably a little bit more user friendly. And I think that there's so many options here in our vicinity for kids to go racing. And then even teenagers into adults to go racing with Legends and Bandoleros and outlaw carts and micro sprints and everything. That I think it's I would guess that it's really taken a hit here in the last few years.
So basically, what you're saying is that go-kart racing has been scavenged a little bit from all these other series that are out there running. So you know, our boy Austin O'Neill was a heck of a go-kart racer back in his day. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, he was pretty
good. No, I did not know that. I mean, I know he's a soon-to-be world-class sprint car driver. I didn't realize he had the karting background.
Well, we hope that he's a world-class sprint car driver. We would love to see him get back behind a wheel. Unfortunately, his season came to an early end because of motor woes this year. But anyway, did you have a chance to watch last night's Castrol Flow Night in America? Did you watch that late model race last night?
I watched the highlights, and here's the funny thing. Here's what I love about that series, okay?
Yep.
I had an event. I was emceeing a Chamber of Commerce event, and so I was done about 9, 9:15. I got home at 9:30. I'm like, oh, great. I'm going to plop down and see this thing.
It was over.
Well, they were done.
Yeah.
And so I love and I watched it, and Jimmy Owens is a machine at that racetrack. I mean, he really has the hookup there as far as that goes. But I just love the fact that on a Tuesday night at 9:30, they're sending people to the exits. I think we can get into the debate all we want about pay-per-view and does it help or does it hurt. Getting things done at 9:30 helps the gate. Yeah. You know, I mean, and maybe doesn't help the gate last night, but it will help the gate going forward if people know you're going to get out of there at a decent hour. So I loved it. Like I said, so I did not watch it. I watched a little bit of the highlights of it. And the O's show was certainly that, especially when he rolls into that racetrack.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Have you been to 411 Motor Speedway? Have you been there before?
No, and it's weird. I've got to do a little bit better job on my planning because that isn't one that I could have made. But I think there's some races that I could get to there over the course of the year. And I was looking at it yesterday when I saw it, and I was looking at the map and looking at where it's at and everything. And I need to get their schedule overlapped with my schedule and get out there. But no, I've never been there before.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I would love to go there. It seems like a very unique kind of racetrack. And old Jimmy Owens, man, he put it on him last night there. That was his eighth straight win at 411 last night. You believe that? That's crazy.
Yeah. It is. It really is. And Scott, you know, I mean, I love competitive racing and side-by-side racing and that sort of thing. But I also love seeing excellence. And I think that's what you see with Jimmy Owens, especially when he pulls into that joint. You just see it's almost like a machine, and it's inspiring to watch, yeah. You know, because the guy is just so good around there. And that was a great field of cars last night. You know,
yeah,
it's not like Kirk and you and I, you know, putting a late model deal together and going out there and racing.
Right.
You know, it was a great field of late models, and he just has that place down. And I love, you know, in watching the highlights, I just love to see excellence. And I think that's what was on display last night. And that's fun to see as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let me ask you this, Steve. Can you remember any time that you've seen Kyle Larson get lapped? He got lapped last night in that late model. I think that's the first time I've ever seen him get lapped on a dirt track.
Yeah, I was trying to think about that as well, and I don't recall any. There might have been, the year that he ran all those races and won all of those races. There might have been a bull ring somewhere but I don't know that he got lapped. I think he might have been ahead of the leaders.
Yeah,
because of this was in my mind as I was watching, whether it was Dirt Vision or Flow or whatever it was. And I was just like, holy God, that's Larson getting ready to get lapped. And I don't remember where it was. And I don't know necessarily that he got lapped, but it's rare that it happens. And he was just an average car last night. That was the thing. I mean, you know, you'll have a mechanical problem, or you'll have a dust up, or you get stuck behind some cars or whatever it is. He was whatever it was 13th. It was a 13th place car. And when do you see Kyle Larson a 13th place car?
Never.
You know, and then you take a car like that and you throw Jimmy Owens into the mix and that puts him a lap down. And but I don't know that I've seen that before. I might have, or I think I saw him close one time, but I don't think I've seen that before.
Yeah, I want to bring up this suspension of Cole Custer's crew chief. I think his name is Michael Shiplett. Is that right? Is that what his name is?
Yeah, Mike Shiplett. Great, great guy. Awesome guy.
But he has been fined $100,000 and been indefinitely suspended from NASCAR. How does NASCAR know for a fact that Cole Custer led up to let his teammate get by? How do they know this for sure? Can you answer that for me?
Well, I don't think they do.
Right.
I think that they're looking at a lot of different parts and pieces, and face it, I've watched the video.
Yep.
It's very suspicious. Mm-hmm. I agree that it's very suspicious, and I think now here's where I think it's happening, and I got a couple of things on this. I've been thinking a lot about this today. Okay, I think we have been headed down a slippery slope because with this penalty, everyone is saying, what about Chase Elliott here? And what about this one here? Mm-hmm. And what about that one here?
Right.
You know, what about Denny Hamlin and letting Martin Truex do this? And what about this? And what about that? And I think that is all concerning. And I think that NASCAR felt that they cannot prove this for a fact, but there's enough evidence that they need to try to stop this from happening. And I think that's why they took the steps that they had. They had a morsel of evidence, and it's a good morsel of evidence. I mean, you know, the crew chief can't see the car in the backstretch and tell him the driver he's got a flat. Usually it's the driver telling the crew chief I got a flat. You know, I mean, so I think there's a more than a morsel of evidence. But I think more importantly, I think NASCAR is like, guys, we cannot have this thing get monkeyed up like this. And I think that's why they came down so hard on it. Now, that's where I'm at on that penalty.
Right. I don't like that
NASCAR is officiating this way, but I think I don't like that they're being put in the spot where they have to officiate that way. And I wrestle with both sides of that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How about Christopher Bell racing his way in, man? Could you be any more happy for that guy?
No, not at all.
Right.
I mean, and this was, Scott, this was an excellent performance by Christopher and his team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was, they had one goal. They had to win this race. They were not in a spot where they were going to point their way in. They had to win this race, okay? And overlay the fact, and we've talked about this, Joe Gibbs Racing Toyotas on road courses have not been good this year. So what they did is they implemented a strategy, and this is Adam Stevens' crew chief, and Adam is one of the sharpest guys that is in the sport, implemented a strategy to stay in touch, stay in touch. They short-pitted the stages because stage points don't matter. They could get all the stage points in the world, and all they're going is home.
Right.
You know, there was one lap they needed to lead, and that was the last one. And Adam Stevens kept that car 6th, 7th, 8th. All day long. Yeah, they would ebb and flow, maybe back to 9th or maybe up to 3rd or 4th as cars were pitting. But he kept that car in play. And what he needed at the end of that race was a late race restart. And what he got at the end of that race was a late race restart. And what he also got is he was running 7th, and the 6 cars in front of him did not pit, put him in the pits, put him out of the pits on fresh tires. And I'm fairly confident he gassed those tires up to qualifying settings and whatever else he could do to the car on qualifying settings. And so that's where Adam Stevens, the whole team aspect, he did everything flawlessly in that race. And he put it in the hands of Christopher Bell, and Christopher Bell did everything flawless from that point forward. He raced his way forward. He got the advantage of Kevin Harvick on that final restart, and he raced himself into the next round. It was fun to watch the way that unfolded, and when you look back at the way it unfolded, it was a special. That was a full blown team, everybody all hands on deck effort. They put the ball in Christopher Bell's hands with fresh tires and a qualifying setup likely on that car, and Christopher Bell did the rest. And that is what a great team does.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think they were the first to pit, weren't they? They were the first one to come in and put fuel and tires on, weren't they? I believe.
Yeah, they were. They came in first and went out first on that caution.
Right.
Is what they did. They were the pit crew. The pit crew won the battle off on pit road.
Right.
You know, you've got to, when you have a plan, and when you have this plan in place, one misstep, pit crew doesn't get the car off from pit road. Christopher misses a turn. You know, they call a different strategy. Anybody can mess this up. Nobody messed this one up, and it worked to perfection. And then that's how in NASCAR Cup Series racing, you take a 7th place car and you win a race. By out-strategizing, by putting yourself in the best spot, by having a great, great driver, and doing it then on that stage where they qualified into the round of 8, it just was a wonderful moment for Christopher Bell and that whole team.
A not so wonderful moment was Kyle Larson coming off the corner and slapping the right rear up against the wall. He did some suspension damage that I think they lost like 5 laps, I believe it was, or something like that when they made the repairs on that race car. But the biggest story of this event has to be that Kyle Larson didn't make it into the final 8. Would you agree?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because here's the thing where everyone is twisted up about what Briscoe did, what Custer didn't do, what Briscoe didn't do.
Right.
Briscoe roughed up Eric Jones, yada, yada, yada. Okay?
Right.
None of that matters if Kyle Larson doesn't run that car into the wall. None of that matters.
Yeah.
And this is where I there is nobody on the planet more pro Kyle Larson than I am. I love watching that cat run any kind of vehicle he wants to climb under the wheel of. I watch him run micros out at Millbridge when he runs out there. I love watching that guy race. But ultimately, he bounced the car off the wall and damaged his race car. You know, by the way, Ross Chastain did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to somebody, and Ross Chastain was suffering through mechanical problems. Well, yes, he was suffering through mechanical problems after he drove the car into the fence. You at this level, and Larson's a champion. And again, I'm pro Kyle Larson. I am as pro Kyle Larson.
Right.
You can't be bouncing the car off the wall because then you put yourself in a vulnerable spot. and that's what they did. And just the way that the chaos over the last few laps of that race ensued, took place, they were vulnerable, and they got picked off.
Yeah.
And they got put out of it. And I agree with you 100%. That is the biggest story that came out of the Roval races, that Kyle Larson is not in the round of eight.
Yeah. He's so exceptional at everything that he does that you just assume that he's going to make it into the final eight and make it down to the final four, and it's just not going to happen this year. He was pretty critical of himself, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think that's what I think. I think you when you said he's so exceptional, my mind is he's an exceptional young man because he knew who cost him that chance.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't go back to the engine failures that they had, and he didn't go back to other things that have happened on pit road and different other things. That team has had some issues across the board, engine failures being first and foremost. He didn't go back to that. He's not responsible. He put it all on himself because in this instance, in this race, he was very critical of himself. And I think that is one of the areas where I have so much respect for Kyle Larson as a racer, but I have even more for him as a man. Because this is heartbreak. This is defeat.
Yeah.
This is coming up way short of what the goal is. This is the big story out of this race. And it's a big story about failing. And him driving that car into the fence is failure. And this is where I have so much respect for Kyle Larson, is because, yeah, it was on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people talking about if this one did this and if that one didn't do this and if Mr. Hendrick didn't appeal the penalty. The one person not talking about it is Kyle Larson, because Kyle Larson's saying, I shouldn't have ran the car into the wall.
Right.
And that's why I'm pro Larson and have so much respect for him, is he's just real. He doesn't run that car into the wall, and we're not having this visit, and he's running for a shot to go to Phoenix and run for a championship. But he did, and he's owned it. And he'll be better the next time and work his way through the process. But you hate to see people that are so talented lose out, and he's so good for the sport, being in the championship run, being in the round of eight, but he bounced the car off the wall, and he's so good as far as a man goes to take ownership of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because he could have went down the road with the motor problems that they had earlier in the year. He could have went down that road, but he chose to take the blame himself. I gotta ask you about Austin Cindric. He ran into the back of Joey Han, I guess the 15 car. I just can't get my head around that. He just ran in there and plowed into the back of the 15 car and then spun himself out.
I'm with you. I have no idea.
Right.
I will, in defense of Austin, and I think the world of Austin Cindric. I think he is the future of our sport. I think he's great. I mean, I just think he's so talented, and he's such a student of the sport. And I'll guarantee you one thing: he's a student of the sport. He ain't gonna ever do that again.
Right.
You know, I can promise you that, because he's one of those guys that's really good at learning from his lessons. But I just think that when that caution came out, we had a ho-hum race that was Chase Elliott out there leading and everyone's riding around the Roval. And I think when that caution came out, I think we went from ho-hum to everybody in the building thinking they had an opportunity, and they all just pulled those belts tight and just got up on the wheel and drove into each other and into other people. Some nice. Came out all right, like Chase Briscoe. Others didn't come out all right, like Austin Cindric.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole tone of that race, I think they lost their minds at the end of that race, collectively as a group, and I don't mean that negatively.
Right.
That's why I love racers.
Right.
I love racers because they can't help themselves. You know, they think they can go. They think they can go to the two marker in a corner. Everyone thinks they can go to the two marker going down into a corner, and they 100% believe they can go all the way to the one marker.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with them, and that's what I love about racers, and I love about racing. And it doesn't matter if it's pure stocks at Paducah or Cup Series on the Roval, they can't help themselves. And I just think everyone rolled up their sleeves in those last four laps, and it just got chaos. And I'm fairly confident there's a bunch of other guys that didn't do things they intended to do. Cindric was in a spot where it was a little bit more dramatic, and dramatic with his points position as well. But there was a lot happening there, and there was a lot to process in that last few laps.
You know, it was good to see Chase Briscoe make it in, but is there a blem to that because the 41 car, people felt like that he helped him to get in? Do you think there's a blem involved with Chase Briscoe making it into the final eight?
The saving grace for Chase Briscoe is that when he entered off from onto the big track backstretch, headed toward that chicane where the blocking supposed or the accusations of blocking happened, he was already in a spot where he was tied with Larson and had the tiebreaker, which that in itself is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Briscoe and Kyle Larson are racing. Who's going to have the tiebreaker more times than not? Kyle Larson is.
Right.
Not this time. Chase Briscoe. So I think the fact that he had the tiebreaker before the Cole Custer thing probably gives him a little grace with people, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea, and I know this is probably an unfair question to you, but do you have any idea, do you have your head grasp around, who do you think will be the final four guys that get in? Do you have a thought on that?
I do. I have three that I like, and then I think the other one could be anybody else. I still think Chase Elliott, week in and week out, day in and day out, I think he's performing better than everyone else. I think Joey Logano is performing consistently better than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think those two are in, and I do like Christopher Bell. I think Christopher Bell won the first round. He had the best average finish in the first round. The second round went down the tubes for him, yet he was able to survive that. And this round lays out well for Christopher Bell. He could go to Vegas and win. He could go to Homestead and win. And I think that's what their goal is, to get that and lock themselves in. So I like those three. I think you can make a case for the other five across the board. I just none of the other five jump out to me
right
as far as that goes. You know, and that's all the way back to Chase Briscoe. Chase Briscoe had the best finishes in the second round. He was the only driver that had three top 10 finishes.
Right.
Well, if he continues and does that, he very well could point his way in to Homestead or to Phoenix, which, by the way, he won in the spring.
Right.
You know, I think you can make a case for Ross Chastain could win any race anytime.
Yeah.
You know, Ryan Blaney has been very consistent, so you could see him consistently get into this thing. Denny Hamlin's been so fast at places that he's got to win. He's got to win, and he could win anytime. I just think you can go down that list and make a case for everyone. But I tend to like Elliott, Logano, and Christopher Bell right now as kind of the three that I like getting in.
We're visiting with Steve Post, the postman from MRN and Winged Nation. His appearance is brought to you by Sage Fruit. We want to thank those guys for allowing Steve to come over here and be a part of the show. I'm with you with some of the drivers that you mentioned. I think Chase Briscoe, Joey Logano, Christopher Bell is going to get in. But I'm not going to count out Denny Hamlin because he can win at any racetrack, right? So I'm going to kind of put my mind on Denny Hamlin as the fourth guy in.
Yeah, that's the thing. Denny has had just raw speed.
Right.
More than maybe anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly on intermediate tracks. And we're going to two intermediate tracks. You know, this first two races of this round really put a good opportunity on it for the Toyota camp, I believe.
Yeah.
I just believe that their intermediate program, their road course, their flag road course season is over. Martinsville, I have no idea what to expect at Martinsville, and I'm not really all that optimistic. So to me, it's like you need to make your hay at these first two intermediate tracks, and I think that's where I'm with you. Denny Hamlin could win both of those races, and I would not be shocked at all. And that team he just has had good speed. So I'm cool with that pick, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, what do you got coming up on Wing Nation? I know you've got a lot going on over there. Kind of fill us in on what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yesterday on the show, and it's all available on our on wingnation.com and all of our social media platforms, we talked to Tyler Courtney. We talked to Sunshine after wrapping up the championship in the All-Star Circuit. And we talked to Ryan Hand. Ryan Hand is the crew chief for Anthony Macri, who got his first two wins with the World of Outlaws. And Ryan's just a great guy. Ryan's a Ryan's just, he's one of my favorite people to talk to in the pit area, and he's his crew chief right now for Anthony Macri, so we have those on. So that was the case with the digital show that dropped yesterday or aired yesterday live, and it's on all of our socials. And then this weekend when we're on MAV TV, Mark Dobmeier, Dynamite from up in the great Midwest, we get a chance to talk to him, and Mark was phenomenal. The last 2 years or year and a half of his life have been, last 2 years of his life, I guess it is, has been he had a bad crash up at Cedar Lake, and he gives us, he really broke down what happened, what he's gone through, and he is back to full steam. He won the River City Championship. He won the NOSA Championship, and it's like Mark Dobmeier is back to pre-crash, pre-2020 conditions, and so we had a good visit with him on our Wing Nation presented by Sage Food on MAV TV this weekend.
I don't know if you've seen it, but my friend Lane Goodman, who's Mike Goodman's son, you know Mike, he's been around for a long, long time, had a really nasty flip at Caney Valley last week, and he landed in a pond. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. I heard you guys talking about it.
Yeah.
I joined the show a little late, jumped out a little late.
I'll send you
so
the link.
No, I heard you talking about water and ponds. And I was gathering my lunch around and doing some stuff in the office, so I missed that. So he put in the drink.
Yep. I'll send you a picture and a link to that so you can see it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We're going to speak to him here in just a minute. So, Steve, we can always thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate you always coming on Wednesday with us when you can. I know some days you got to travel and it doesn't work out for you, but man, we can't thank you enough, and we want to thank Sage Fruit again for allowing you to come over here and be a part of the show. Thanks so much, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Scott. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, buddy. We'll see you then. There you have it, the postman, Steve Post. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Lane Goodman, better known as Yogi, is going to join us next here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, to make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
39 hole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I want to remind everybody they've got a new Corvette, a 2023 Z06 Corvette with a Z07 performance package. It's a pearl white metallically tri-coat color. And not only are they going to give away this Corvette through the drawing, they're also going to give you $25,000 in cash as well, and they're going to give that away on August 19th, 2023. This car has got 760 horsepower. It's a 5.5 LT6 V8 engine. This car goes from 0 to 60 miles per hour in 2.6 seconds. 2.6 seconds from 0 to 60. That's pretty crazy. It's got an 8-speed transmission, a lofty 8,600 RPM. It's creating, again, 760 horsepower. It's an all-aluminum block. It is just a great car. You need to get involved and buy some raffle tickets for this great Corvette. It's a 2023 Z06 Corvette with the Z07 performance package in it. You can do so right now. All you have to do is go to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum and purchase this car. This car is probably worth somewhere around $75,000. It could be worth over $100,000. So you need to get involved right now. Purchase your raffle ticket at their website. What is the website here? I'm looking for it. He had it right here. Where is it? Use the promo code 2002, promo 20, to get a 20% off more tickets with the Z06 Corvette. Again, up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. And listen, folks, when you purchase these tickets, all that money goes directly to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. So make sure that you buy a raffle ticket for this new Corvette that they've got up there at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. Let's go to the phones right now and bring up a friend of the Racing Boys, longtime friend, Yogi Lane Goodman, joins us now. How you doing, Yogi?
I'm doing all right, Scott. How are you?
Man, I was sure glad to see that wreck. That could have ended up pretty bad, that wreck you had at Caney, huh?
Yeah. I mean, looking back at it, the speculation, it could have gone a lot worse for sure. You know, I mean, there's a few variables here and there that you change, and I mean, just minor things, and it ends up differently for sure. You know.
Yeah. So I saw you start at the back. Did you hop a wheel going down the front straightaway at the start of that race? Is that what happened?
Yeah. So we're going down the front stretch on the start of that heat race, the last heat race, and just trying to make something happen when I probably should have been a little bit more patient. And got a run on my good buddy Travis Ashwood going down the front stretch, and coming into turn one, I was already on the top side of the track, and he had no idea I was up there really, and then he goes to enter one and moved up a little bit, and then I just caught his right rear on my left rear, and that was about all she wrote. I took flight after that, you know.
Man, I hate that, because it probably destroyed your race car, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I mean, other than my seats, thankfully, and I think the headers are good, but other than that, I mean, pretty much everything on it was junk. The rear shocks were fine, surprisingly, and hopefully the rear end was. Everything on the rear suspension was intact, but it took some hard hits on the frame itself and the front end for sure.
That was a JR1, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it was a JR1.
Yeah, for sure.
It did an awesome. I mean, I can't speak enough on Jerry Russell's cars, because if I go, I mean, when the slow-mo video gets released, I think Danny Clum had a really good shot of it down the whole front stretch. You'll be able to see every single hit on that car was on the frame itself.
Man,
and it held up amazingly, you know.
You got some altitude there on that last little jump up, didn't you, right before you landed in the pond?
Yeah, it that was probably the most eerie feeling about it, because after that first hit, I had two or three quick ones, and then after that, I had a really long time in the air, and it was just it was, like I said, an eerie feeling just hanging around, you know, waiting for that last hit.
So tell me what happens when you land in the pond, because I know some people came to your rescue. Tell me about that a little bit, would you?
Yeah. So you kind of have to go back to when I'm in the air, like we were just talking about, and I see the pond coming on that last hit as I'm nose down, and
then
when it comes around, it landed left side down in the pond, probably 10, 12 feet away from the bank itself. So I was fully submerged underwater. I saw it coming, and as soon as I hit the water, I mean, just that the water filled my helmet up, I grabbed my belt, released, popped it. Grabbed the wheel release and swam out under the car, under the wing. And as I surfaced, James Moran was chest deep in the water. I mean, as far as he could get out and just reaching for me, you know. And I don't think I took a breath from the time that I started, even got to the bank. And I was struggling to swim at that point. And James, I mean, he got out there and grabbed me. And then Johnny Kent and his father were on the bank as well. And they pulled both of us up and grabbed us up and just made sure I got up to the ground. And then that's where I set, was right on top of that banking facing the track that I just went over, you know. I mean, I couldn't speak enough on James Moran and Johnny. I mean, everyone else that was there to help too, but it says something when someone's already chest deep in the water before they even know if you're out of the car or not, you know.
Yeah. Were you dinged up a little bit? Were you mentally kind of out of sorts a little bit when you got out of the car?
Yeah, I was definitely a little disoriented for sure, and I was more shaken up, I think. I mean, just talking about it kind of gets me a little shaky still. The whole water part is, I think, what freaked me out the most. And, I mean, I flipped a race car before, and that one was hard. Hardest one I've been in, but I think the water and the added the shock to that is just really what kind of got me going. And I sat there, and, I mean, I couldn't breathe because I'm in a head sock. Soaked, so I didn't really say anything until I got the head sock off and everything, and I sat there for probably 5-10 minutes before Brian came over and interviewed me, and it was still a little bit of a, you know, shaking up for sure. I don't think any of the pains really set in right then. I'm more of a, you know, day after type guy, I guess.
Yeah, well, that was a scary deal, man, and anytime you land in water and your head goes underwater, I'm not sure I've seen that happen before.
I mean, I've been going to Caney a long time, my whole life almost, and I haven't ever seen it happen there, you know.
Was there a wall? There's not a wall down. I think Austin said there was a wall down there that you flew over. Is that correct?
So there's a that embankment that you see in the video.
Yeah.
I mean, that's easily 8 feet tall. And then there's a concrete set of blocks that's like 2 blocks high that sits across that whole banking. But I flipped over the side that didn't have the concrete, and I probably would have cleared that anyways, and then landed in the pond, you know, after that.
Yeah.
But there is a solid, you know, 40 yards in between the actual outside edge of the track and then that banking of the wall, I guess you would call it, that Austin's talking about right there. I mean, so it was a distance of a flip, and when it hit that banking, it just, like, catapulted it, you know.
Yeah, those barriers are down there for sheet metal cars, right?
Yeah, it seemed, you know, you hate to look at something like that and can kind of determine what it's for. You know, I guess it's not really conducive to sprint car racing. Mm-hmm. That's pretty obvious out of this whole deal. And you know, prior things that have happened in the sport. But in my opinion, if you can look back in hindsight, 2020, you can put a catch fence all the way around 1 and 2, and that might have stopped it. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's hard to prepare for something that happens like that, you know, because yeah. if you go back and look at the actual distance between the edge of the track and that wall, it's not really, you know, something that you would think about, a car flipping that hard, especially a wing car mm-hmm. that typically slows down, you know, when they start flipping, and that one never really did. But if you're really looking at, like you mentioned, being for sheet metal cars, that's really what they run primarily most, I guess, at that track. So it'll work for that type situation. I could understand that. But there has to be something done, I think, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's proven that you can get there, so they need to do a little bit more improvement down there, I would think.
It's kind of, you know, the trend is wait till something happens and then fix it.
Yeah,
I think on this time, I'm thankful that I did get lucky, but luckily nothing did happen this time, even though it ended up there, you know.
Yeah.
I hate that is the trend in our world, but sometimes you got to be a little preventative, and that's not speaking bad on, you know, Caney Valley Speedway or Caney and them, or Kerry Gorby and them by any means, but
no doubt.
You know, it's something to think about moving forward, at least, you know.
So what do you do now? I know that you just have the one car. Do you get you another JR1, or are you going to go over and maybe buy one from Blake Hahn, or what do you do now at this point?
So that's up in the works already. I've been on the phone with Jerry, you know, trying to work something out and get a frame down here. That's step number one for right now. It got the engine and everything when it ended up in the water. So that would be number two, is to figure out the engines moving forward for the rest of the year, or even in the next year at this point, just because of how late we are. But I guess I'm lucky to grab my seat out of that. I don't have to get one of those, you know.
Right.
That seems to be the longest thing. But, yeah, get the car, get everything, you know, rebuilt. We just have that one frame. Hopefully, you know, we can find one. You know, Blake might have one for sale here at the end of the year that we can grab one and get a spare two. And if we can rebuild a little bit stronger, that would probably be best case scenario, you know, at this point.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it goes.
If anybody wanted to get in touch with you to help you out, how would they get a hold of you? Is there email address, or is the Facebook, or is there some way for somebody that's listening to the show right now, if they wanted to reach out to you and help you out a little bit, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, my email address or my personal Facebook, you could definitely reach out there. Just Lane Goodman, L-A-N-E is how you'd spell that, or LaneGoodman3G@gmail.com, no spaces, all one word. Just reach out on my Instagram as well, LaneGoodman3G. That's all it is. That's probably where I'm going to be most active at. And then from there, I could give you my cell phone number, and we could get something worked out.
Yep. All right. Well, man, I hope that it turns around for you. I hope that you get another chassis, and I don't know if you're going to try to race again this year. It might be a little tough to do that this year, right?
You know, I'm hoping to get something, lined up to at least finish on a good note. I'd hate to end the year in the sprint car on that, you know, especially before Chili Bowl.
Yeah.
So I'd want to get something at least, you know, mussied up before the absolute end of the year, which is probably the ASCS show at Creek 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
So
the fuzzy fall fling.
We'll see how it goes, you know.
Yeah, I know you'd like to be at the fuzzy fall fling, right?
Yo, I would absolutely love to be there, especially, you know, for the Hans and all them, especially everything they've done for me. And, you know, Blake's one of my dearest friends. So it'd mean, you know, a lot to be there for sure. I'm going to be there regardless in attendance, but to race it would be even better too. So,
yeah. Well, Yogi, I'm glad that you're okay, my friend, and I just wanted to reach out and try to help you a little bit, maybe get somebody involved and try to help you out a little bit on the show. So good luck to you the rest of the way, man. I hope somebody reaches out to you. Again, that's Lane Goodman at 3G.
Yep. LaneGoodman3G@gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Okay. Yep. All right. Yep. Yogi, that's thanks so much for coming on the show, buddy. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, Scott.
All right. There you have it. Lane Goodman joining us, better known as Yogi, on the show. And if you guys want to help him out, you can do so and just reach out to Lane. He is a really good guy, man. I really think the world of that guy, and he's a good one. All right, well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the show today here on Mostly Motorsports. I'm going to be cutting out of here as soon as I'm done with this show, driving to Devil's Bowl. I'm going to get down there. I'm going to try to do my show from the rooftop of Devil's Bowl Speedway tomorrow. It's supposed to be beautiful weather down there this weekend, so it's not going to be too cold. It's not going to be too hot. I think it's going to be just right, about high 80s, about 90 degrees, so it's going to be perfect weather. If you are a person that's living in the state of Texas, you need to get over to Devil's Bowl Speedway and check out this event. You never know when it might be the last one at Devil's Bowl Speedway. And we're going to try to get Lanny Ross on to talk about the future of Devil's Bowl while we're down there this weekend. So hopefully we'll talk to LR when we get down there this weekend. Again, for Austin O'Neill, for my partner Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor. Thanks for joining us here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll see you tomorrow.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.